Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey.
Hey, thank you, Dan, for bringing us in. Dan's not with us today, but we have... Thank you very much, Mark. We have Mark Halleck.
Hey,
Mark,
what's up, guys?
And we have Jimbo Stewart all the way from Jacksonville, Florida.
Glad to be here.
And we are all around this little tiny table in a little tiny room in Indianapolis at the Southern Baptist Convention.
I know. What's something you guys love about Indianapolis?
The fact that it is not 120 degrees.
Totally, man.
Yeah, but that's not normal.
That's really normal for me. Yeah.
It's pretty unusual. We are here at the Southern Baptist Convention. I realize you're going to listen to this weeks later. I get that. But this particular week, the weather's wonderful.
It is great.
It is. You know.
So I know people tuned in to hear about a weather forecast from the city
three weeks ago.
So thank you. Yeah, we have weather and traffic on the 8th. All right. Anyway, we are here at the Southern Baptist Convention. And I'll tell you what. There's some strange-looking people at this place. That's all I got.
All right. I will say, so I think we should say
quite
this.
A family.
What? So great thing about Indiana, you should connect with the Indiana Baptist State Convention. They've got great guys.
Their church health lead,
yeah. Scooter Kellum, big fan of the podcast.
Okay.
And so,
I think Scooter and Jimbo ought to do something.
I mean, look,
Scooter
and Jimbo. Listen. You ready for
That's
this?
A podcast.
You ready?
Yes.
Scooter and Jimbo and Chip all used to do youth ministry together in New Orleans. Chip Luter, Fred Luter's son, and Scooter Kellum and me. Dude. We were the three that did everything together in New Orleans.
Yeah,
that's awesome. That's great, man. I don't think I've met Scooter.
Yeah, you should meet him.
I want to meet him.
I think you met him at the Replant Summit.
I did. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, we are here, and we're going to shift now. Though, so we're here with 10,000 other Southern Baptist pastors.
Yeah, at least.
At least. And the reality is some of them are deeply hurting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because this is not easy work.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard work. And I've been a pastor for over 40 years. My dad was a pastor and my great-granddad. Both Halleck and Jimbo have been pastors for decades. We know what we're talking about. And this came from our good friend Chuck Lawless. Guys, these are 10 reasons pastors hurt so deeply.
Mm.
And I think you're going to identify with all of these. But sometimes you wonder, why is this work so hard? Why am I so tired? Why do I find it so difficult to be enthused about this work? And why do I find myself so oftentimes leaning toward depression and anxiety? Mark, number one, what does Chuck say?
Man, number one is we mourn when marriages fall apart.
Yeah.
And man, I'm just to be honest, man, we're living that right now.
Yeah.
In our church. And it's heartbreaking. It's so hard. He says this. He says, we usually hear both sides of the story and we're privy to both anguish and sin. Often we've seen the pain that divorce can cause. And man, that is so true. And it's painful for so many reasons. I mean, you love both many times. You've spent time and shepherded these two individuals, their children, to see kiddos. Now, I'm a product of divorce. Am I the only one of the three of us? Mm-hmm. So my parents got a divorce when I was in high school. And I can tell you to this day, the pain of that.
Yeah.
And so as a pastor now, walking through that, it's incredibly painful. We do mourn when marriages fall apart.
And oftentimes we're the ones that counseled them and then married them.
Yeah. Yes, that's right.
And then that marriage falls apart. Mm. And we've got to see how we can pick up the pieces. Mm-hmm. And then what happens? You know, do they both continue to come to church there?
Right.
What if one is completely unrepentant and maybe church discipline has to be dealt with? I mean, that's anguish.
Oh,
that's
anguish.
Awful. Number two, we hurt when young people make decisions that lead to trouble.
Mm.
How many times, guys, have we seen an 8 or 9 or 10 year old come to faith in Jesus and just be so excited about their faith? And you baptize them and they just can't wait. I remember handing this little girl a survival kit for new Christians as a kid and how excited she was to get it. You know, went over and took it to her house. My wife and I had dinner with her family and she couldn't wait to start filling it out. And then, you know, decades or so later, she makes some really bad decisions in her life and just completely rejects everything that she said she believed. And I'm going to tell you, as a pastor, that shakes me to my core, because I was convinced that this young woman made a legitimate profession of faith. She legitimately repented of her sin and asked Christ to save her. And then as a teenager, she's legitimately walked away from all of that and said, I no longer believe it and I no longer want it. Mm-hmm. And those kinds of things, as a pastor, you bring all kinds of things into question, at least for me. And you see what they've done, and you just think, could I have done something different? Mm. Should I have seen something I didn't see? Was I too eager to see her come to know Christ? Did I baptize her too quickly? Yeah. I'm being very frank about this.
No, I'm totally with you, man. I mean, this is something, especially for those of us who served as youth pastors. So I was a youth pastor for 13 years before I was a lead pastor. And I'm telling you, one of the things that just breaks my heart is I remember some of the students that we had over those years who were on fire, man. They were on fire for the Lord. Like you said, baptisms. I can think of retreats we went on and concerts and mission trips and just worshiping the Lord with them. And now they're not even following Jesus.
Yeah.
And it kills me, man. I mean, it's one of those things. It keeps me on my knees. But that's a unique pain, I think, that pastors feel, that's hard to explain sometimes to non-pastors, you know, because you're so invested in the souls of people. And it hurts. It hurts bad.
And today, because of Instagram, we're able to see their lives that we wouldn't have saw 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Right.
And we see just how reprobate they are living
and
how open they are with it and how proud they are of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And trying to deal with that. It's just like failed marriages. We mourn that and these failed lives. Number three, we beat ourselves up when our sermon wasn't as strong as we thought it would be.
Mm.
Man, have you ever felt that way? Oh, you walk out of the pulpit and you think,
yes,
I should be doing something else. I don't need to be doing this anymore. I can't no more do this than anything in the world. Right?
Yeah. Dude, I mean, there's Sundays where, and we talk about this and we believe this. I believe this. I preach ultimately for the glory of God. I want to please the Lord. If nobody else shows up, I'll tell you this though. If I'm going home on a Sunday and I'm laying in bed or taking my afternoon nap on Sunday afternoons, and this often happens, and I didn't hear one word of encouragement, you know, and I know the work I've put in.
Yes.
I know the time. I preached my guts out, man.
Yes.
I preached the gospel with all that I am, and not one word of encouragement. And this sounds so, I'm just being honest.
Yeah.
I'm just being honest. Like, I don't need but what's going on in my head? I'm going, Lord, that's when Satan gets me.
Yeah. Like,
what are you doing, man? Like, and my insecurity, I will say, well, did I say something?
I know. And
do you know what I'm saying?
I do. Like, and I sometimes I'll preach and I'll think, I've just dug myself into a hole here and I don't know how to get out.
Yeah.
And this sermon's not going where I wanted to go. And spiritually, I am dry.
Oh, I know.
And there's no power of the Holy Spirit here. And I'm trying to do this all in my flesh, right?
Yeah.
And then I get in the car and I say, I try to bring it up like, music was okay today, wasn't it, Gil?
Yeah, it's fine. Fishing for something.
How's the children's ministry today? It was good, you know. Donuts okay? Yeah. You know, and I'm just waiting for her to say something like,
give me something.
And by the way, the sermon is great, and there's nothing.
Nothing.
You know.
Nothing.
Okay. Then, you know, and
those are the days, man. Aren't you just thankful that your identity is not in who you are as a preacher. It's in Jesus.
I preached my heart out.
But it's hard.
Hang on.
Because you've worked hard.
I preached my heart out not long ago at a large meeting. And a pastor I greatly respect.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he did.
What happened?
He told a friend of mine, he said, that was the best, worst sermon I've ever heard.
Hold on, what did he mean by that?
I don't think I exegeted the text correctly, but I was awful good at
your
what I did.
Your delivery was incredible. The best worst sermon I've ever heard.
So, you know, what you have to do is, I like what our friend J.I. Packer said, it pleases God to find the needle of truth in the haystack of error.
Amen.
And so, look, you're not defined by one sermon.
That's right.
And God can use that one sermon in a way you could never possibly imagine.
Yeah.
And
have you ever had one of those you thought was horrible?
Sure.
And then all of a sudden, like,
totally, man.
God moves and you're like,
it happens all the time.
It
happens when you're like, people take from your sermon something you said that you didn't even remember saying.
Right.
Yeah.
And what I always say is, if you watch football, you know, and you see a quarterback throw a pick six, right? What's he do? He goes, sits down, he looks at the tablet, sees what he did, and then what's he do? he's done. He can't be thinking of that pick six.
Yeah.
Right. You can't.
Put it behind you.
You got another Sunday coming up. Yep. That's a great opportunity. Let that thing go.
That's exactly
and
right.
And look for the next Sunday. All right. Number four.
Number four, we sometimes grieve the sin of others more than they do. Oh, he says, we know we can't bring them to repentance on our own, and it's agonizing to watch them continue toward destruction. You talk about divorce, having interest. I'm living this out with a friend that is unrepentantly leaving his family and with no good reason and with zero grief over the sin, and it's agonizing to see that there's no conviction, and I'm heartbroken, and I'm watching this, and as a pastor, that's so hard to watch people you shepherd and you love choose sin with no grief.
Dude, sorry, yesterday, this is good stuff, by the way. This is yesterday. I don't do this typically. I try not to check my messages before I go to church. I've just found over the years, and maybe this is helpful for somebody, man, my heart needs to be in tune with the Lord. I can get distracted. Well, anyway, I got a message from a guy that I shouldn't have checked it, and it was super critical and negative. Mm-hmm. And this is a guy I've known for many, many years. He's not a believer. And when I see this, I just thought, you know, this guy, what ached me was, dude, this guy is so dead in his sin, Lord, that you're going to have to do a miracle to bring this guy back to life. But this is how I feel when it says we grieve the sin of others. Man, I grieve over how lost that guy is.
Right.
And I love him, and he drives me nuts.
Right.
But there's a unique kind of thing that I think as pastors we experience with even lost people like this, that we grieve in a way that, man, he doesn't even care. But I feel the weight of his soul. Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And anyway, so we feel that. We wrestle with that.
And then fifthly, this is a really hard one. We ache. We literally ache when we have to carry out some form of church discipline.
Yeah.
Again, we go back even to the divorce. Maybe one of the spouses was unfaithful, and they're unrepentant about that.
Yeah.
And they refuse to repent about it. Well, we're going to have to remove them from the church. They can't stay an active member of the church if they're living in adultery. You can't do that.
Yeah.
And then there are other things along that line. We have to do church discipline, and we don't, there's nothing joyful about that.
No.
Now, we do it for loving reasons, just like you discipline your children. We also do it to protect the remainder of the flock and to protect the glory of God's name in the community. I mean, we have to do it, but man, it is hard.
It's so hard, man.
It is so hard. And that's one of the reasons, guys, most of us don't do it.
Yeah.
We don't do it.
Well, and sometimes you meet young guys, and I think in a healthy way, there's been a kind of a resurgence of conversations about church discipline, I think, in recent years. And I'm thankful for like Nine Marks and other ministries that have done that. But I can always tell a young guy who gets he's pretty excited about it. Like, it's almost like a hobby, you know? And I'm like, bro.
It's like going into battle.
Yeah, it's like going into battle, man. I'm all about church discipline. No. Are you about church? And I'm going, bro. You don't, until you understand how painful that is.
Right.
You know, I think let's talk in a few years.
Yeah. How do you love it? Yeah. How do you love members deeply and find joy in church discipline?
Well,
I mean, it has to grieve you.
It grieves you. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And
So oftentimes we find on two extremes, there are those, like you say, who enjoy it for whatever reason, and then those who completely avoid it.
Yeah.
And
right.
Number six,
we struggle when the churches we lead aren't growing.
Well, I know. And a lot of that is just brought on by the culture of the church growth movement that says if you're a winner, your church will be growing. And if you're a loser, it's not growing.
Yeah.
And I've spent the last 20 years of my life trying to just deflate that bubble and say it has nothing to do with it at all.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really know what growth is. That's up to the Lord, and we're just to be faithful, and he'll grow his church. And again, but it's hard when you look at the numerical numbers who are coming to gathered worship, and those tend to go down. And, you know, sometimes I've brought this up in large group settings with some very well-known pastors, and one of them said to me, Mark, the only people who don't care about numbers are people who don't have numbers.
Mm.
And it's like, That's exactly what I'm talking about. Ooh. That's the same kind of hurtful language. Man. You know, I just, yeah. and I'm like, I'd like to take you out of that church where you're serving yeah. and put you out here where this guy is, yeah. and let's see how you would do, right? Yeah. I mean, yeah, I know. You know, all yeah. by yourself with no staff,
yeah.
you know, and you got to work a 40-hour job as well. I mean, maybe you do okay. I don't know. But yeah. you don't know where he is.
That's right.
And so yeah. I think we bring this on ourselves, and I think, but it is true. So much of our identity is tied up in how many people mm-hmm. are in the pews on Sunday morning
mm-hmm.
and how big our church is, and is it declining? And I look, is it declining numerically? That's one thing. But is it growing in the love and the knowledge yeah. of Christ? Is it increasing its footprint in the community? You've got to look at those things. All right, we got to hurry along here. Okay, so we're talking about reasons that ministry is so painful. Mm-hmm. I just want to recap it real quick. We mourn when marriages fall apart. We hurt when young people make decisions that lead to trouble. We occasionally beat ourselves up because our sermon wasn't very good. We grieve for the sin of others more than they do. We ache when we have to carry out church discipline. And we struggle when the church we lead is not growing. Number 7, Mark?
Yeah, we sometimes hurt alone when we see the loneliness and struggles of our families.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a whole nother yeah. realm of this. Ministry right. can be really hard on our families.
And it can be very lonely on your family. Yep. Your wife can feel like she doesn't know if she really has any friends or not. She's first seen as the pastor's wife before she's seen as an individual. Mm. And she's seen in this role. Your kids are seen as preacher's kids before they're seen as individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a real hard time sometimes developing serious friendships within the church, especially yeah. if your church is an older church and yeah. they're the younger people and all yeah. that kind of stuff. And just the loneliness of ministry. And so you see, you not only have to deal with all the things we talked about a moment ago, but now your family is struggling.
That's right.
And they're hurting. Oh. And then you feel guilty, like, did I bring them into this?
Yes.
Would it be better if I went to and got a secular job and they were free to go to any mm-hmm. church we wanted to go to right. where they could just be regular church members,
yeah.
they didn't have to come to this declining sick church that I've been yeah. called to help revitalize.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a real issue.
No, that's exactly yeah. right.
And we got some podcasts on that. You'll go back and listen yeah. to them about how to minister to your family yep. in these yeah. transitions.
Here's number 8. We quietly grieve funerals for persons who showed no evidence of Christian conversion.
I know. We're asked to do the funeral of these church members or friends of church members,
yeah.
and they say they're Christian, but yeah. yet they weren't in church for years. They don't show any evidence of it. And you stand there and you go, yeah. I can't with integrity
yeah.
do this.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
we grieve over, are they truly in heaven? And all their friends and family, it's, well, Grandpa's in a better place. Grandpa hadn't been in church in 40 years, okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
But he's in a better place now.
Right.
That after a while, that just wears you down.
It does.
And you go, you know, I just don't know.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yep.
Yeah, man, we have to lead those in those situations. But the tears sometimes come in the quiet rooms of our lives, mm-hmm. and we're just alone by ourselves, and mm-hmm. we, you know, did this person really, truly
mm-hmm.
know Christ? And
mm-hmm.
we wrestle again. Where did I leave him? Where did I fail?
Yep.
Yeah,
those kinds of things.
Number 9, we wrestle with loneliness when we don't know how to develop strong friendships.
Yeah, I think many times pastors don't know how to develop strong friendships. Mm-hmm. The reality of it is, within a smaller congregation, it can be hard to develop strong friendships, because if you, as a pastor, develop a really close friendship with one of your deacons, and there are 4 deacons, let's be honest, the other 3 can feel like there's something going on here that mm-hmm. is a power play, or you're closer to that guy. Now, if you're in a really big church, I think it's easier maybe to have those few, but I think it in a smaller situation, it is a little tougher maybe to have 1 or 2 really
yeah.
close friends if you spend all your time and go fishing with them and you don't do with the other men
yeah.
in the church, right?
Yeah.
So
guys,
what happens
jealous.
Is yeah. we tend not to go with any of them.
Right.
Yeah.
And we don't have any, and that's a bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
So your friendship has to be found somewhere, maybe outside the church with other pastors or whatever. But I understand the wrestlingness, the way you have to wrestle with that. But man, it can be, going through this all alone, man, it can lead to all
mm-hmm.
kinds of depression.
Yeah, totally.
Number 10.
Number 10, we often feel guilty even expressing any of the things we've just said.
That's the whole point.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I shouldn't feel yeah. this way because I'm a pastor.
That's right.
Where's my joy?
Yep.
Where's my confidence in the gospel? Why am I so discouraged over these things? It's
yeah.
what Chuck Lawless is telling us. You're discouraged over these things because they hurt.
That's
and
right.
if they didn't hurt, you wouldn't be a pastor. I mean, mm-hmm. what kind of pastor wouldn't hurt over these things and grieve over these things?
Yeah.
But when you do that, the answer is really to turn to Christ and know that he is the safe place and he is enough, and realize you cannot do this on your own strength and your own ability, and spend more time with him. 2 or 3 episodes ago, we talked about 10 ways a pastor can pray every day.
Mm.
That's why you need to do that
yeah.
because of something like this, right?
That's right.
Hey, if it's hard, we know it's hard, and we care about you. Check us out at churchreplanters.com. Let us know how we can help you. You can email us at replant@nam.net. And please subscribe and listen to this podcast. And we will be back again if the Lord doesn't come. If he does, we'll be gone. But if you're still here, feel free to listen. All right? Take care.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.